Hello, guys. Welcome to Coffee Talk with Rob and Greg, episode 34. I'm Rob.
I'm Greg. Hi, guys. And today we welcome back Stephen Jones, the business disruptor. And you're actually got so much stuff going on at the moment. We've been watching you. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what's happening and what you've been talking about way before everybody else was talking about it?
Sure. First of all, T-shirt, living room. I would normally offer an apology for that, but I think in the current circumstances, the fact I'm not lying in bed in my pajamas is a step in the right direction. Months ago. So I'm as you know, originally I'm a business strategist. So my job is to look at what could happen, what might happen, and what businesses can do to mitigate against it. So stuff that I've been saying for years, things like you need to have a minimum 3 month to 6 month war chest, you know, where you've got the break even covered for your business if something should happen, business interruption or whatever that might be, and lots of stuff like that, being able to work from home, having a business that you can switch to electronic rather than just face to face all the time wherever possible. Rob and I, we've discussed several times about your online coaching rather than face to face coaching, because yep. There's only one of you, there's only so much time. So when everything started kicking off in China, I was saying, if it gets out, that could happen in Europe. Oh, don't be silly, Stephen, it'll never happen in Europe. We've got a decent medical kit. Well, okay. So it started happening in Europe. Okay, it could happen in England. Don't be silly, it's never going to happen in England. Well, we could go on lockdown. No, it's never going to happen. And then we got asked nicely to go on lockdown. And then people kept ignoring it. So we got told, instruction now, not asked. You notice the language on the news changes, and that is a very significant change in language. And then this weekend, they're saying, if you do not follow the rules, because they're now rules, yeah, we will impose restrictions. So rather than having an enforced lockdown like Italy or France and people, you know, breaking onto the streets and rioting, whatever, they've tried to do it gently. They've tried to use the British resolve. And for various reasons, some people aren't adhering to that. So it will get stricter and it will continue the spread of the virus until people learn just to stay at home. So, I was talking about it a while ago. You know, prepare yourself in case the worst does happen and hope it doesn't. It's that simple.
This is it, isn't it? It's, the thing is, you know, people are generally starting to kind of slowly get there and start to understand the severity of the situation. But the trouble is, when the news and media start saying, looks like things are starting to even out and starting to get better, people then think, oh, let's get back outside, let's have some fun. But of course, us guys, we want to try and to be able to work from home still and do what we do. Luckily, I'm able to do what I do and things are no different. You know, writing, coaching, podcasting and stuff. Have things changed a lot for you, Stephen, in this time?
No, I mean, I've been ramping up slowly. I mean, I was on your podcast a while ago and it got me thinking about doing my own. And then I was waiting for a podcast training in February that I went on. And I launched my podcast at that point, which was Stop Surviving, Start Thriving. And the idea there was to talk to people that have been going through life quite normally. Something really out of the ordinary had happened. And that basically meant that their life changed. And it's about how they thrived because of what happened rather than just survived despite it or because of it or whatever it might be. So the first interview was with a guy called Pert Pixton, who's now got his own radio station, digital radio station, and he's the guy that teaches podcasting. And he's done that because when he was not able to work properly, not able to get up, not able to do more than about an hour of actual work a day, he spent that time learning about podcasting and different ways to promote your podcast and all that sort of good stuff. Mm. And the second one was a lady called Amanda Taylor. Similar situation, going through life, working with a husband, doing her own thing, everything's fine, and bang, you've got cancer, you're going to die.
Mm, so I remember that when that happened.
Yeah, so she had to face her own mortality. She had to have that conversation with her kids that nobody wants to have. You know, when you sit down, I mean, if you've not got a will, you need to get one done. If you've not got an LPA, you need to get one done. But when you sit down and contemplate it, because we've got to get that stuff done because we're adults now, that's one thing. But when you have to do it because it might be needed next week, it puts a very different focus on the problem. And then week three was supposed to be whoever it was going to be, and then everything just went absolutely. My son got chickenpox on a Thursday before. My daughter was kicked out of school. We knew lockdown was coming, and I was busy trying to sort out. I'm getting phone calls now from clients I worked with 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that said, you know, you told us to get that 6-month war chest together. Well, we had it. Now we've got that money. We're paying our guys. That's great. But what can we do next to get, you know, to rebuild or to the new term now, pivot? I don't particularly like that term, pivot. I think redesign or retool.
I just think of that scene in Friends with the sofa. Whenever I hear the word pivot.
Trying to get that sofa word, up the stairs. I don't know what you mean.
It's a weird word. Yeah, you're right.
Pivot. I'm pivoting. So
that's it, though. It's interesting what you're saying about that. Is, you know, learning to thrive as well, because a lot of people just survive in life, don't they? They just get by almost by default, and they don't really design a situation that they want to be in, or something that's can provide them some kind of stability and security, just in case shit hits the fan. But on that subject, what would you say to people out there that, you know, because I guess, you know, when you've got cash reserves or cash flow, some businesses have, and they can put that to one side and use it when really necessary. Would you say that's the best thing to do to protect yourself?
Well, yeah, now we get into a moral dilemma, don't we? So let's say you've got 10 companies. And five of them have built the war chest up, and five of them have just wasted the money on whatever, or just not saved anything back. Mm. And in ordinary situations like a recession, you cut a lot of the fat out of business. I've always said that you don't lose good companies in a recession. You lose bad companies in a recession for the most part. Obviously some good ones will fail, but good companies that have planned, that have structures, that have contingency plans, that have a war chest, get through bad times. Ones that don't have any of that don't get through bad times. You know, it's that simple. Mm. Now we're in a very different situation where literally the entire, let's say most of the world is in the same situation, not just the country, where the government have said in our country, you cannot run your business. Now, those companies that can afford to pay their staff and everything, should they continue doing that, or should they furlough their staff and use the government money to pay for them? Should they use their reserves to pay for their rent and their tax and all the bits and pieces, or should they be allowed to turn around and say, sorry, we're going to use all the provisions that you're putting in place as well? And that becomes a bit of, why should I, who planned for this, spend all my money and everything when everybody else is going to get a bailout? And that becomes a bit of a moral dilemma for me there. Mm. But the issue now is, and my third, I just did it, I it all went live yesterday, is my third podcast on Stop Surviving, Start Thriving was with Quads Crosley. And awesome. I think both of you are aware of him and have listened to some of his stuff. Yeah,
we had him on the podcast previously.
Brilliant.
So he and I are both of the impression, there's no point sitting here now saying, I told you so, you should have had that money. There's no point going back, sitting there as a business owner or somebody that was working for yourself or whatever it might be, going, oh, I should have done that, I should have done the other. It's too late now, okay? And now, I've lost a fortune twice, okay? The first time, there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. The second time, there was even less that I could have done about it. And I've not sat there and gone, oh, shit, but if I'd done this or if I'd done that, then that wouldn't have happened. Then I'd, because there's nothing I can do to change the past. It's done. We are where we are. Luckily, and it's ironic that the whole point of my podcast was to talk about what I call the three mindsets of humans being. So the first one is victim mentality, the people that are always looking for somebody else to fix their problems for them, whether it's the government, whether it's doctor, whether it's whatever, they want help to get out of whatever situation they think they're in. And they're looking for somebody else to do it for them rather than taking the bull by the horns and fixing it themselves. Then you have what I call comfort zone mentality. And I used to put about 95% of the UK population in that sector where, as you're saying, things are okay. You know, I don't have 6 months worth of cash flow in the business, but, you know, I don't need it because everything's fine. You know, I don't need to take out extra insurance for business interruption because, what's going to interrupt the business? And the perceived risk of change to thrive keeps them in the comfort zone.
Mm.
Mm.
And most people are in that comfort zone, or were in that comfort zone. So I was trying to talk to the people who thrive. So people that something's happened and they've changed because of it, or weirdos like me that have just gone off and not followed the rules and, you know, lived outside the box for, you know, however many years it's been, and don't do things normally. Don't do the 9 to 5, the mortgage, the, you know, just not, I've not followed that life ever. And now, suddenly, 3 weeks, or technically we're 5 weeks into my podcast being launched, the entire country is in that situation of, we're facing something different. We're going to have to change how we think, how we live, how we work. You know, Spain have just rolled out universal income. And they've said that they will roll that out after this has happened. So then the important questions come along. So I was asked yesterday by somebody, because I've done a lot of work in finance. They said, so all this money that people are borrowing to pay for all this stuff, like paying for people to stay at home, whatever it might be, who are we borrowing it from? Aha. Now ordinary people are asking the right questions, because that money doesn't exist.
Mm.
It's not like it's not like the British government are going to the Chinese government going, oh, could you loan us £300 billion pounds, please? They're going to the World Bank or to the central bank.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the World Bank that this is coming from? Because I was reading something about that yesterday, about the World Bank.
Right. So where did the World Bank get their money from?
That's the thing.
Did they go to another world? Are we going to go to another planet and borrow money from them?
Yeah. See, we're going to have to pay it back somewhere along the line.
Well, now you say that, but here's the thing. At the end of the Second World War, every European country was bankrupt.
Yeah.
Every single one. So what did we do? We changed the world economy. We got rid of gold standard, gold reserve.
Yeah.
And we created fiat currency. And fiat currency, for me, is the biggest Ponzi scheme that we've ever had working on this planet. And I don't want to go into all the details because it makes you sound like a conspiracy theorist, but basically banks will lend you, they'll give you paper. So I will give Rob paper. And this piece of paper says, in 1 year, I'll pay Rob, let's say $100 million plus 1%. Yeah. That piece of paper, Rob, I'll sell that to you, but I need cash, so I'll sell that to you for 200 million. Oh, sorry, for 200,000. Well, let's say 2 million. Let's be generous. So I said 100 million, didn't I?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So do that. So I'll sell you that 100 million in a year, and I'll pay you. It's a promise to pay you. I'll sell you that for 20 million. Sorry, I'm changing my numbers in my head as I'm going. So you give me 20 million cash, and I'll give you that piece of paper. Now, you sell that piece of paper to Greg for 40 million. You've just made 20 million cash, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because you've got 20 million cash that you're holding, if you remember the fiat system, you have to have 10% of your book value in cash holdings.
Right.
Right. So you can do one of two things. You can either lend 90% of that 20 million out to other people, or you can say, well, look, I've got 20 million on my books, which I'm holding in physical cash, which means that's 10% of my book value.
Mm.
And my book value is now all the way up there, on the back of which I can lend money. And the whole thing is a Ponzi scheme. None of the money exists. It's not backed by anything. It's not. If the whole system implodes tomorrow because of what's happening with coronavirus, you cannot go to the Bank of England and say, give me gold to the value of my money.
Well, it's a bit like when you study the Federal Reserve, isn't it?
It doesn't exist. That's a private company. The Bank of England is a private company. It's all a Ponzi scheme that when one person tried to go and do the same thing privately, he got put in jail for it.
That's interesting, yeah. Because, I mean, back in the days when I was doing network marketing and stuff, and MLM, all that kind of thing, you know, a good 15 years ago, I joined a lot of different companies, really for an education, because I'd sort of sold a cleaning business, and I was like, oh, this is quite cool, helping other people. But then obviously, you know, you can only help people who are prepared to do, you know, they're accountable and responsible for what they do every day. You can't rely on that necessarily. Mm. But talking about money, what do you think about Branson and what he's doing at the moment? Because obviously, you know, he was saying that his staff would get 8 weeks with no pay. Rolls Royce are saying we should keep him. BA are his rivals and saying tell him to get lost. Is he like a British heritage that we should hold on to? Do you think he's still relevant in his philosophies and his way that he deals with his staff? And or is it just the media?
This is, I think for me, that's just distracting noise at the moment. That I cannot imagine coming out of the back end of this that anything is going to be the same as it was going in, unless we're incredibly unlucky and they manage to keep the lid on it. Because I've been saying it to somebody, I can't pay the rent on my office. What am I going to do? Nothing. A, they can't just kick you out. They've got to get bailiffs out. Nobody's going to be sending bailiffs around at the moment. No courts are going to be sitting to judge whether you should be kicked out or not. Then everybody's in the same position. I'd said right at the beginning, if they forget giving this to them and that to these and these, giving something else to those people over there, give everybody £2,500, universal credit, sign up now, unless you don't need to. And if you don't need to, we'd ask you not to. Sign up for universal credit, get £2,500 a month, and everything stops. Interest, credit card, loans, mortgages, everything is stopped. We're on pause, almost like stop the world, I want to get off. You know, which we can't do. But they could. The government could have just said, everything is now stopped. When we deem that it's safe to go back into operations, everything starts back up again, and you'll have a year to get back on track. And in that time, we'll pay £2,500 a month up until you don't need it anymore. Then some people would use the system. Some people who don't need it would get it. And I'm sure some people wouldn't be able to apply and they would get left behind or whatever. But it would be a much better way of leveling the playing field for everybody rather than what I'm seeing, which are clients trying to get a loan. The bank's saying, we're not going to give you that loan, the government loan, because you've got a house. I put your house up for mortgage. Company next door doesn't have a house. He's getting the government loan.
I've seen so many similar posts about people saying, oh, what can I do? My application has been rejected, or, oh, they're saying that I can't get a loan because of X, Y, and Z. Like, I think it's a bit ridiculous that the government's saying, right, you can apply for this, but the bank, either the banks are saying no, or they're putting like some very specific criteria that most business owners don't meet.
I started a petition. I'm waiting for it to go live at the moment, and it's been delayed. So whether it's been delayed because they don't want to put it through or what, I don't know. But the petition basically is for the government to sit down with the banks and say, this is what we've promised people. Go do it now. No dicking around. No saying, oh, hang on, we've got to credit test you or this test you or whatever. We've told them they can have 80% credit limit. Set the criteria. So it has to be, let's say, we'll cover 6 months worth of operational costs for businesses in a loan. It's 80% guaranteed, and they can apply for up to 6 months worth of cover. And that's government-backed loan, and there's no credit testing. There's no pressure testing. Just get it done. So they need to create a final solution that covers everybody.
Yeah. You got this on change.org, or you applied to put it on there, or one of those?
I created the petition. You've got to get 5 signatures to go live. Within 10 minutes, we had 20. And people say they couldn't sign it.
No, I tried to sign it, and it keeps telling me that this petition is being reviewed.
I couldn't sign it either, yeah. But yeah, obviously, see what happens with that. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see if it gets accepted and it can gain some traction, eh?
Yeah, I don't know. As soon as it goes live, we'll try it, see what happens.
Can we just go back for a second as well?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's interesting actually, because when I met you before, we were chatting and stuff, and I got a fascinating story. I'd love to hear a book that you write one day, and if you ever want any help with that, let me know. basically, education experience, isn't it? Like, everybody that's ever got anywhere has had times where they've lost everything or whatever. And that's a great education and great experience in business, isn't it? And what would you say to people out there now, including Rob and I, anybody really, that are in a situation where they may lose everything? I mean, is there a certain perspective or mindset thing or focus that you could recommend to in this situation? Or
I always think it sounds trite, which is why I don't tend to talk about it much. But let's go back to the first time I lost everything. I was living in the south of France. Everything was cool. I was living off interest on monies. And then one day I got a message from Lloyds Bank saying, your account's gone overdrawn. We're not paying any monies out. That's odd, you know, because Lloyds Bank was my UK company. I had an offshore business that I'd had before I came back to the UK. And every month there'd be a transfer from my offshore accounts to my UK. I was living in France and I would spend money, you know, based on that. So it took me about 3 weeks to get through to the bank offshore. It's a long involved story what happened, but basically all the money had gone. Quite a few people had been taken the money and gone. So I literally woke up bankrupt one morning, having been quite comfortable the day before. So I didn't get time to sort of ease into it like we're doing at the moment. And I think from that perspective, it was probably better, because people now are sitting there going, well, what am I going to do if, and what am I going to do when? And I'm saying to anybody that's a client of mine, I'm saying, look, there's no point stressing about it now. And this is, again, why Croz was a perfect podcast for this time for me, because all you can do is cover your bases and do any mitigation that you can do. So when I go and work with a client, the first thing we do is we do sales boards, work in progress boards, so that we know what's in the sales pipeline. Visually we can see it, and we know what's in the client development or what we're working on pro side of things, and we can visually see that. Because then at 3 o'clock in the morning when you wake up going, did I do that proposal for so-and-so, or did I finish doing that thing for what's his name, you can stop your mind and go, I've got it all, it's all up, it's all planned, I know what's going on, it's fine.
Yeah.
When you don't know all the facts, when you don't have all the information, your brain can't process it, because it doesn't have all the information to process. So that's when you start to panic and start to worry and get the anxiety and the nervousness, which it's just a downward spiral. So the second time I lost everything, I was in Chile. I couldn't leave the country. I'd given up all my clients because I was going to leave, and I couldn't leave. And everything was going from bad to worse. And I caught myself in a downward spiral as a victim, that victim mentality that I was talking about before. I couldn't get a job here because they were bastards. They wouldn't give me a job because they didn't understand what I could do for them. This. And I caught myself and stopped it. Now, at the moment, we don't know what the world is going to look like in 4 weeks' time, when we might start to get some restrictions. Because we ain't getting any next week, because we haven't behaved for the last 3 weeks. So when they do next week tell us what's going to happen for the next 4 weeks or the next 3 weeks, it's going to be continue. And if you don't behave yourself, then we're going to be locking you down even harder. Now, how many restaurants are untenable because they can't survive? How many shops, how many smaller businesses, how many medium-sized businesses? And okay, you've got the Richard Bransons of the world, but SMEs account for 52% of the UK employment.
Right, right.
So yeah, exactly. If all of them go under, which let's say 80% are just going to go under. Right. Mm. Let's say 50%. That's 25 million. Oh, sorry, it's 25% of the UK workforce lost their jobs. Who's going to pick up those pieces? Who's going to create those new jobs? So, whatever happens at the end of this, we're all in the same boat. You know, we can no longer say, "Oh well, he's got to." You know, you've got to take him bankrupt because he hasn't paid the rent on his store or on his office, or you've got to, you know, they didn't pay their debts, so we have to punish them, because everybody's going to be in the same position. So that the point of that is we cannot plan for what we're going to do after this, because we don't know what after this is going to be. All we can do is look at our businesses and say, okay, what can I do now for the next 4 weeks, because we've got, you will take 4 weeks more of this, to start talking to the people that are my ideal clients in a way that would help them now and allow me to get paid something. So I've been struggling to get it done, but over the Start Surviving, Start Thriving in Your Business site page or group that I've got on Facebook, I'm trying to get together a group of expert advisors that will handle each area of taking your business online. So doing messenger chats, doing mail merge, you know, emails and MailChimp and things like that.
CRM stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, creating a course that would work, that you could sell. You know, most people who do any sort of consulting or coaching or non-hands-on with people type work could create an online course. And even, you know, somebody's asked me the day, well, who couldn't? Well, I don't know. Give me an industry that you think couldn't do anything online.
See, I was thinking about this. Right. I think, like, even restaurants, there's things they could do online. Like, for example, they could do, like, a course about, here's how you make our food. Like, I noticed McDonald's sent out an email about, are you missing a sausage and egg McMuffin? Here's how to make your own one at home.
Right. Spot on, Rob. That's exactly what I was saying. So give me, there is no industry that you can give me, realistically, that could not sell some sort of online course.
And I was saying to Rob the other day that, you know, obviously I've got an online course. We were talking about Udemy or Udemy, and some people make a lot of money on selling courses on there, you know, pretty cheaply, but they've got to be good quality, you know, content, copy. Like you said, any niche, really. Also, some businesses in America that are very, very good, reputable restaurants are starting to create pop-up, drive-by, takeout, you know, stuff. So I know we all get annoyed with that pivoting word, but I guess they're changing the business model a little bit. So thinking differently and seeing the opportunities that are there is kind of where the focus needs to be, isn't it? And as you said, you know, it is all about really mindset and how you see things in business. And from your experiences, you know, it's helped you to grow, hasn't it? And to adapt, I suppose you could say.
It's all a question of going through the steps, isn't it? You know, the second time I lost everything, it was much easier to rebuild because I knew what was required at the final destination and along the way. Here's the thing. Most of the clients I work with, especially the smaller businesses, all make the point that they haven't got time to work on their business because they're too busy working in it. And that's something I normally fix fairly early on. You've now got time, guys. Right. So let's look at this as a positive. I've now got 4 weeks. So stop trying to be the world's best homeschooling parent. Stop trying to be the world's best partner. Stop trying to be the world's best going out there and becoming an athlete. Do some basic stuff. All right. So help your kids a bit. Get out there and exercise a bit. Be there with your partner a bit. Relax and enjoy the time that you're spending with your family. If you're not on your own, if you're on your own, you know,
hang on.
Get out. Talk to people online as much as possible. But use this time to think about, I used to say to my clients, I say used to because I'm not seeing them anymore. If I had a magic wand and I could transform your business now, what would your business look like? Now, it sounds like a very glib question, but if people hear this, whatever day this is for them, spend today 4 hours during the day today thinking about what your life would look like if you had a magic wand and you could create it to be anything you want. Now you have a clear mental image of where you want to be, and then do the same with your business.
You've got a solid vision there.
You know where you want to get to. Now, I, for example, would like to go and live in St. Lucia. I know that now. So now all the decisions I make in business and in life are, is that going to help me get there or not? And if it's not, then I'm probably not going to bother doing it. There's a lot of opportunities that presented themselves to me this year that I've gone, oh, that would be interesting, but it's not going to help with that final goal, is it? Move it aside.
That's a very good point, actually, because, you know, it's something I do is I align my goals with my values, and everything has to be a part of that bigger vision because, you know, it's so easy to get distracted nowadays and look for opportunities which don't relate to anything you're doing. And it's easy to try them. And a lot of people with the... you know, with business opportunities in that niche, they fall into this shiny object thing that we've all heard. And I was there myself. I used to throw money at things and go, just try that. But I didn't really know how to market then, didn't know how to sell, I didn't know how to brand, I didn't know how to do any of that. So I think once you know what your vision is and you know that you have something clear and you're working on that, and if you're lucky enough to have something which you can do from home and leverage, as you said, most businesses and most niches and sectors can bring something online into a course, can't they?
Yeah.
I agree.
I think something that's coming out of all of this, and I've been saying it for a while, I've been out of the UK for many, many years, as you know, and when I came back in, the last time I was there was sort of 2006-07. I've come back. In 2006-07, all these guys running around the networking events that were just starting up their new businesses didn't know how to sell. I've come back several years later, and it's exactly the same. There's still lots of people trying to run around and set up their own businesses that don't know how to sell, they don't know how to market, they don't know how to do client delivery. They're very good at doing what they might do, but they're not very good at the rest of the business. And now is the time, as far as I'm concerned, for them to sit down and think, do I really want to be a business owner? Am I actually a business owner, or am I self-employed with the world's worst boss?
Right.
Because it's okay to say, you know what? I'm not the right person to run my own business. I don't have that vision of where I want it to be. I don't want to bring other people in to work with me. I don't want to rely on other people to do sales for me. I don't want to rely on, you know, an accountant that I'll bring in-house when it gets bigger. I don't want any of that stuff. So you don't really want a business. What you want to do is work from home and have an easy life, which is fine if that's what you want, but you have to clock that and develop that as what you're doing. And understand
what you'd call like a lifestyle business, where they're not necessarily fuss about it becoming like a big thing. They just want something that means that they can sort of work from home and get paid a nice sum that sort of covers the bills and stuff.
Absolutely. Just as Stephen says, you know, even if you want a lifestyle business, it's still a business. You still need a plan. You still need strategies. You still need to put the time and effort right into that. Because I get people contacting me and saying, I want to work 3 or 4 hours a day. Is that what you do? I'll say, do you know how many years it took me to get to the position I'm in, you know? And people just think that they can have a, like you said, a mentality like they're going from a job, 9 to 5, into a business, and maybe even working less than that. Like, I just do what I want every day. You think, all the best, go ahead and try it in a year, and then tell me how you got on in a year's time. Come back to me and let me know. And I literally have got people come back to me a year from when I spoke to them and said, you know, I think you're right. I say, you know.
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny.
I'll tell you a story.
That's why I only work with certain people, you know, because you've got to work with the right people, haven't you?
Yeah. In 2001, I'd moved my office from Texas, where I was, and I'd set up a second office in London, and I was running two offices. So in Texas, I used to work from about 6 o'clock in the morning on phone calls, dealing with the East Coast, and I would finish. I mean, I wasn't working straight through full hours, but I would make some calls that I had to make in the morning, and then I'd get to the office, making some calls in the car on the way, work, you know, 9 to 5 at the office, come home, repeat the same thing in the evening. I'd probably be in my office at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, making a couple of calls to investors on the West Coast. And give you an example, the guys were, I used to consult to an office, and I used to have my own sales guys. And the guys in the office I was consulting to were bitching and moaning one day. Went, oh, you know, you must be lying on the phone because you've got so many sales. You can't be doing that legitimately. And I went, okay, I tell you what, guys, bring in your phone bills tomorrow. I'll come back in tomorrow with my phone bills and we'll have a look. So, of course, the phone bills for them were the office phone bills. Now, they're on commission only. So it's in their interest to work as hard as they can. They would make their first phone call at about 20 past nine. They'd make about 4 or 5 calls an hour. They'd stop at about 11:30. There'd be no phone calls from about 11:30 to about 1:30. And there'd be about 4 or 5 an hour in the afternoon. I'd made more calls by the time I got to the office than they made all day. In a day, a full day, I was doing more than a week's worth of their calls. That's why I had 7 times more income than they did.
That's not rocket science. Relentless.
Yeah. Right. And then I moved to the UK. So I had the office in Dallas that I had a manager in place at that stage, but I was still obviously watching that and working on that. I had 5 to 10 guys at a time working for me in London, and I was starting to do some contract negotiation work, getting into the large contract stuff that I wanted to do. So I used to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. My ex-wife would wake me up with a cup of tea. I'd go in the shower. Once a week, I'd shave my head. I'd get into the office by about 7:30, and I would work through till the guys came into the office at about, I used to open the office at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because we were calling America, right? They would then work through till 10 o'clock at night. I'd kick them out. I'd go back upstairs to my living room because I had an office downstairs and a flat above, and I would work through till about 4 o'clock in the morning and then go to bed. So when I'm in the south of France and I'm retired at 30, and I'm doing the large contract negotiations, I'm living off my money before I lost everything the first time. I made friends with the guy who was the sales director at the English radio station in Monaco. And he said, your life, I'd love your life. I used to sell stuff for them. Like if I'm in a restaurant, I'd talk to the restaurant owner, why don't you advertise on the English radio station, you get lots of customers, blah, blah. And I'd do that for them. It was just a hobby, really, more than anything else. So, oh God, I'd love your lifestyle. You know, you don't have to work, you don't have to do anything, da, da, da. You're so lucky, you know, what can I do to do that? I said, well, go back 10 years, all right, and work your ass off. That's what it takes.
You know? Right.
It's a question of one of those overnight success that takes 20 years to get there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard work. It's lonely. It's hard work and it's thankless. You know, you're small business owners now. And let's take the comparison between, you mentioned Richard Branson. Those guys are dedicated to the brand, the employees. They're dedicated to their job. You've seen the people where the company's gone bankrupt crying because they've worked there for 20 years or whatever, and they love the company, they love the family, and blah, blah, blah. But as soon as the shit hits the fan, they get cut. Redundant. Piss off, we're not interested. No discussion, no sorries, no apologies, it's done. Now look at the small business owners who are being asked to put up their houses as collateral just to pay the salary for the staff. And they will do that in most cases because that's what small business owners tend to do. And most of them will do that without a word of thanks from their employees.
Mm.
Because the employees don't understand what they're putting on the line for them.
Mm.
So that's right. What we're thinking about. If you want to set up your own business, do you? Really?
You really? Yeah.
There's some really good jobs out there.
It really is a mentality shift that you need, isn't there? And that's the thing with business. You know, it's got to be totally different. You got to be, as you said, expected to work your ass off doing the right action, you know, being productive, not just busy, you know?
Yeah, busy fools.
What were you going to say, Rob?
I was going to ask about in regards to like prospecting and marketing yourself at the moment, like, How should people be going about that? Because there's a lot of people saying like, oh, if you're marketing your business right now, you should be doing this for free. And, oh, you're profiteering. You're trying to make money off of a crisis. Like, how can people go about sort of ethically doing sales and marketing themselves at the moment?
I have to be careful what I say now, don't I? There are people, there are always people and companies who are going to try and profit out of disaster. There were guys in the States that had bought, I forget what the story was. They bought something, I think it was protective masks or something.
Yeah.
And
similar about Antibac, this guy that bought loads of Antibac gel.
Yeah. And then they were banned from selling it. And you know what? That was a good step in by the government, because the people that are trying to profit from this, in my mind, should be shut down or worse. The people that have a business and they think there are people out there that could still use their services. Rob, you're a great example. Everybody's trying to do personal fitness courses now. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Well, Joe Wick's going and doing the PE lessons.
Yeah, the BBC have rolled out the Green Goddess, for Christ's sake. You know, I don't know. I thought she was in a home. I didn't even know she was still alive. The point of that is that people still need to keep fit. If you go out there and go, I've got this course, it's £1,000 and you need to do this because there's no other choice. That, obviously, that's a stupid way of marketing yourself at the moment. But there's no reason why you can't be out there saying, look, I was already trying to get myself an online, or I'd already got myself an online coaching system. It, you know, it's something that I want to improve. It's something I want to fix. At the moment, I'm offering it for X per month. I'd love your feedback on it if you want to do it. And it's there to help you get fit and healthy, or stay fit and healthy, or get fit and healthy. You know, whether you want to use this time to get fit and healthy for the first time, or whether you want to just keep yourself motivated, talk to me, I can help you. I don't think there's anything wrong with that approach. I'm saying the same thing to businesses. You know, I normally charge what I charge an hour. I'm offering half price at the moment because costs are different, but people have money to spend, you know. If you, and I've said to people, if your business is one of the ones that's going to fail because of this, if you're stressed, if you're worried, give me a call. First half hour is always free anyway. Let's have a chat for half an hour and see if you want to use me to help you plan on what to do next or where to go next. I'm not forcing myself down people's throat. It's an offer. I'm taking 50% off my pricing because I think it's only fair at the moment. Some people are taking advantage of that offer, others aren't. I know, unfortunately, most of the people who need to take advantage of that offer won't, because they're too busy panicking.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, but my course sales have gone up in recently because, it's only 29 quid anyway. But the thing is, what I try and do is what most people try and do if they're creating a course is over-deliver with value and, you know, a variety of different things within that. Yeah. So the thing is, and this isn't just talking from a greed or profit point of view, but if you can sell courses that are relatively cheap and you can deliver on that and help people get results, at the back end, you can start to offer your high-end stuff or premium, because I sell premium coaching. You know, I don't sell like this, that, you know. So either way, you're going to make a front end. It's a bit like when you're building a list. You can offer a free book and then a one-time offer, $7, $8, $15 as an option, just to bring in a few quid at the front there and then sell at the back end.
It's also an icebreaker. It's also an icebreaker. So I used to do this when I sold investments, where we used to sell $100,000 units. And at once every sort of 3 months, I'd take one unit and I'd break that up into eight. And everybody in the office go, oh, you can't do that. You know, it's far too cheap. Blah, 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 blah. Well, hang on a minute. Before I turned up, you were selling $5,000 investments. We're now selling $100,000 investments. So break that up into eight. I'm still selling it for more than you were when I first turned up. But the point of breaking it up into eight was to get guys who were just a bit too nervous to throw $100,000 or more in to just get a taste of it at a lower level, because sometimes people need that comfort on the buy-in. So Rob, you've had a copy of it. I created it before all this happened. There are four levels that you need to think of in terms of revenue and income. The first one is all the free stuff that you do. So giving advice in Facebook groups, talking to people for half an hour for free, whatever that might be, that free work is designed to create noise to show people that you're an expert in your field. Right? And from that, you need some sort of hook. So download my 10 fitness tips. In Rob's case, I think you've got loads of different things you can offer there, Rob, where people can download something for free, which gets you their email details and means that you can start talking to them. And then you need a cheap, as you're saying, Greg, you need a cheap entry-level option, 10 quid, yep. 20 quid a month, or 10 or 20 quid, full stop, depending on what it is you sell. From there, you need your core business revenue, which, you and I do the same sort of thing. It's one-on-one coaching, one-on-one sales training as well I do, and that could be to a corporate or could be to a small company or an individual. And then you've got to think about all the time in the back of your mind, that high-end stuff. So corporate gigs, big corporate gigs, speaking events, sponsorship for your podcasting or your whatever it might be.
And workshops.
That's where the bigger money comes in, Now, those are the elephants. You don't survive on elephants, right? You kill an elephant, everybody eats really well for a while, but you survive on the rabbits and the deer and the little things that you get along the way. It's an old hunting metaphor I used to use. But you want to keep in mind, if you see an elephant and you've got a chance of taking it down, go for it. But don't lose sight of the stuff that keeps you sustained if the elephant doesn't go down.
Makes sense.
And those are the four levels to think about. Whenever you're running a business, you've got to constantly think about those four levels and where you're at on them.
And of course, products and services, like anything else, change and develop, and demand changes as well, of course.
Yeah.
And so there's times when you have to think, okay, what's selling most? What do I need to scale? What do I need to cut back on? What do I need to, obviously at the moment we're in a situation where we can't really plan too much, but
you can't plan anything. Say to people? What can you?
What would you say to people who want that vision?
You cannot create a solution to something when you don't know what that something's going to be. So if you're going through this first three weeks with, and I talk about having glasses on. We used to wear a certain set of glasses 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and that set of glasses told us that everything was fine. You borrow money from the bank, you pay back it with interest, you do this, you do that, and everything's accepted. Now, there's a chance that we'll go back to that after this. I can't see how, because I think they've said something like tax would have to be at 180% in order to make this money back.
Right.
So, exactly. So we work for free and pay 80%, and we don't have to live. There's going to have to be a fundamental shift, not only in thinking, but in how we operate and how we work. Now, there may be a new global financial system at the end of this. I don't know. It'll be bigger people than us that make those decisions. But something will fundamentally, they're either going to wipe out all the debt, start to get Who knows? But because we don't know, how can we plan for it? So if I say to the two of you today, okay, great. Today is Tuesday, right? This time next week, I'm going to do something amazing. Turn up, be ready. What are you going to do? What are you going to plan?
To turn up next Tuesday.
We're going to start asking you questions. What is it we're going to do? Are we going to go outside or inside? Do I need a coat? Do I need to jump? What do I need to bring food? Am I going to be gone for a long time, for a short time? You don't know. So how can you plan for what we're going to do next Tuesday if you don't know anything about what it's going to be at the back end of it? Okay. So take this time, and it's time that people don't normally have unless something drastic happens in their life, which is what's going on now. Take this time to reevaluate where you were and where you want to be. Talk to your partner, if you've got one. Talk to your family. Talk to your friends. Talk to people that you admire. Talk to people that you respect. And work out where would you want to be in business and in your personal life if you could just have a magic wand and do that. But you can't plan you go, how you're going to rebuild the business because you don't know what's going to happen in 4 weeks' time.
So it's interesting what Stephen's saying, really, is that, you know, we can still focus on our vision, essentially, right? And have something, you know, without it sounding like airy fairy, something positive to think about, you know, and to focus on and to use this time, because actually a lot of people, a lot of people are in that fear mode of panic rather than in that solution orientated mode. Or
what are we panicking adapting. About? What are people panicking about?
That they're going to die.
No money. Well, we're all going to die.
Soon.
I hate to break the news to all these people that haven't, that all these people that didn't realize it up until 2 weeks ago. We're all going to die. It's just a question of when.
Yeah.
So if I said to you, okay, you are going to catch this disease, the two of you are going to catch this disease on week four. So we're going to have another, we're going to have this week of lockdown, then again, we're going to get another 3 weeks. At the end of that 3 weeks, you will be dead of this disease. What are you going to do differently for those next 4 weeks than if you didn't think you were going to die?
I can't talk about that on the video, but it'll be fucking epic.
The point is, how would you spend your next 4 weeks if you knew that at the end of it, you're not coming out of it alive?
I think you'd certainly value your time a lot more.
Well, why the hell wouldn't you do that now anyway? Because you can't do anything else.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
It's like Brad, how we talk about the tickets, using your tickets wisely.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. We may never have this time again, you know? Back to...
You know, when I was homeless in South America and really at the lowest point I've ever been at, people would look at me and go, you know, you've lost everything. Okay, but I'll build it back up again. Because whatever it took. So here I am, I'm in a foreign country. I don't speak the language. I've got no connections. I've got no friends. I've got no one to bail me out. I've got no welfare state system. And I've got a new wife and two kids. And I'm homeless.
I think they call that
When I left, that was 2015. When I left in 2017, I had a hedge fund in the States.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, that wasn't luck. That was because I've already worked through losing everything. I'd worked through it. So I can't say to people, oh, just don't worry about it. You'll be fine. You won't be fine. But imagine, right, this is the first time for most people that they're ever going to go through something like this. Most people, if they avoid cancer and all the rest of the scares that people have gone through, they would never go through this in their lives. So use this as an opportunity. It's going to be different in 4 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. If you knew that in 4 weeks' time that you would be dead of coronavirus, I guarantee you, if that was written down and it was a guarantee, you would spend those next 4 weeks doing something very different than you spent the last 2 weeks doing.
Absolutely.
You won't be arguing with your spouse as much. You won't be arguing with your partner. I know people who are trapped in the house with someone that they were about to divorce. Go back to what you liked about them in the first place instead of focusing on the negative. Look at this from a point of view. This is a reset button for life that nobody ever gets normally unless it's really bad situation. Mm. Now we've all got it. Spend these 4 weeks looking for positives and looking for things that you do want to do, that you do enjoy, that you can do. Because when we come out the back end of this, whatever the situation is, we will all find a way to make it work again.
Mm.
We have to. because the picture I changed on my Stop Surviving and Start Thriving podcast, I've put a picture of a tree that's lying horizontally along the ground, and all the branches are growing up straight. Now, that tree, however many years ago it was when it fell down, didn't sit there not doing anything, going, oh, shit, you know, nobody picked me up after that storm, or, you know, nobody's helping me to get straight again. It just carried on growing. It carried on doing what it's going to do, because that's what trees do. Mm-hmm. And we need to learn from those trees. It might sound a bit hippie shit, but we need to learn that no matter what happens at the end of these 4 weeks, we're going to have to keep going, because the only option is to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. There's but spending 8 weeks in lockdown to come out and kill yourself. You may as well have done it at the beginning, you know.
Good point. So
I'm not saying it's all black and white and it's all really easy, but forced into this situation, you've only got two ways out of it. One is alive and one is dead, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you're either gonna kill yourself because everything's so bleak, like they did in the recession in the 30s when they were jumping off buildings because they'd lost everything. You're going to catch coronavirus and survive, or catch it and die, or not catch it and be lucky. I think most people have probably had it, to be honest with you. I think I had it last November.
I'm certain I had it in January as well, because I had a really bad...
You remember November? I was down for like a week. You remember that? And I lost like 4 kilos. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. I didn't know what day it was. I couldn't get out of bed. I'd never been ill like that before in my life. There we go. But coming out of this, we're entering... I don't think anybody went through the Second World War going, oh, this is really shit. I'm going to lose my business and I don't know what to do. All the time. They must have done that a bit, but then they had no choice. It was a war. We've got no choice. It's a war against a virus. Dig in, all right? Look for the positives. Go for a walk every day like you're allowed, or a bicycle ride. Don't sit on a park bench. You know, don't sit down and sunbathing. Don't go building a bloody barbecue on the beach, which I thought was illegal anyway in the UK, but I might be wrong. Go and do your walk. And when you're going for a walk like I do, look around. I heard a really weird noise yesterday when I was doing my trying to do a run walk thing. And I was looking, what the hell is that noise? I looked up and it was an aeroplane. I haven't seen an aeroplane in the sky for 2 weeks. That was
unusual. Very limited flights right now, right? Some coming from Dublin.
I can actually see two, which is really weird. I really do live in the Bristol Airport. But yeah, get out there. Take a picture of a tree. Take a picture of a flower. Take your kids out. Do flower pressing.
The thing I've noticed, the bird song. Like you hear birds a lot more than you normally would. But because there's all the cars and the airplanes and all the other noises that would usually be.
Look at this from a...
You don't hear it.
What's the name? Greta...
Thunberg.
Thunberg, thank you. Pollution's clearing up. There's virtually no cars on the road. There's virtually no airplanes flying. Everybody's getting to spend time at home with their loved ones. And we're moaning about it.
Perspective, eh? It's perspective.
we should be the happiest we've ever been. We're getting paid to stay at home in most cases.
I think there's an element of that is how British people cope with any situation, is we always sort of want to have a moan about it, like how we're always constantly moaning, oh, the weather is awful.
Yeah. Whereas me, I mean, it's similar to Stephen, but in a similar kind of way. I had nothing. And I think, I don't know if it's because of that or because of the way I was brought up to appreciate things. My mum had no money.
Yeah.
So we always had secondhand this, that, and the other, and we were grateful, you know. Yeah. So I've always grown up grateful for whatever I've got, and I'm grateful for every day when I wake up, you know. And I think if you can create a perspective or a habitual mindset that appreciates the smaller things in life, you're winning because you will feel more joy than if people who are chasing this, that, and the other all the time and not realizing that it's right here, you know.
Yeah, well, I was chasing it all the time the first time when I was in the south of France, and I had lots of money, but I was chasing bigger deals and more stuff.
Sure.
And I was looking at, just before I lost everything, I was out looking at a house that was 35 million euros, you know, and we were out at the Monaco boat show looking at yachts that were 50, 60 million, thinking that's the next level for what I get to. And even when I lost everything, I had a plan to get back there, and I was going to get back up to that level and blah, blah, blah. And then everything got kicked out of me a second time. I went, you know what? I've been focusing on the stuff. And the first time when my daughter was born and I was starting again, I made a commitment to spend as much time as I could with her. I think that always backfires with kids because they don't maybe appreciate it as much. You know, we're lucky we're in a house with a garden. Mm. I went into the kids' room yesterday. I took the room into a playroom. And I went in there and I went, you guys haven't been out in the garden all day. No. Well, it's a beautiful sunny day. Some kids are stuck in an apartment and would die to be able to get out into a garden. Wow. You know, get out there and enjoy it. And it's the same with anything. Your mindset is what's going to set this properly. So if you want to be miserable and negative, the best quote on this I've heard in this whole thing is from that guy that the BBC were working with, the Harry, that hero from the, he was at Dunkirk and he was collecting, raising money for a war memorial. He's the old guy, and everybody was crying and everybody was really emotional because it was beautiful. So well, they interviewed him again the other day to say, you know, what are you? Well, he's self-isolating. He's 90-something years old. He's literally been through hell and back on the beaches of Dunkirk.
Mm.
And he said, look, for all those people sitting at home right now, if you can't be happy alone at home by yourself, you can't be happy anywhere.
Mm.
And that for me, is the neatest distillation you can make of the point, which is, if you are not happy at the moment, you need to take a very serious, hard look at why you're not happy.
Correct.
Is it because you don't have the house that you want? Is it because you don't have the relationships that you want? Is it because you, whatever it is that's making you unhappy now, you need to examine that part of your life and work out how you want to change it.
Yeah, work on it. Well, you know, people, like you said earlier, people are always looking for everyone else to bail them out, to help them, to do this, to do that. It's like, you know, the first responsibility is self-care. You know, you've got to start to look at your thinking patterns, what you're doing with yourself and everything else, because that's going to come out of you and affect everybody else around you as well, maybe for generations, if you don't learn to manage it.
I summed it up the other day, and for me, it's probably the first time I've got a handle on that, how it fits in with those three mindsets, which is that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. That's the old joke, isn't it? It might be a train coming towards you, but there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. However, if you don't have a fire inside you to get up off your ass and walk towards that light, you're never going to get out of the tunnel. Because nobody's going to come along, pick you up and carry you out of the tunnel. And that's what people need to be focusing on. I'm not a mindset guru. I'm not a life set coach. I'm not, you know, I don't have the seven-figure income marketing bullshit program that everybody needs to buy. But it's very simply this. If you don't take responsibility to drive yourself forward, nobody else is going to do it for you at the moment because they're too busy worrying about their own shit.
And look at that, guys. That is some sage advice right there and some wisdom.
Good way to end the podcast, sir.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure again, Stephen, and you know, we're always
going to talk to you guys.
Good to have you on.
We have to get the time out after all of this has passed to get together again and have another coffee in Bristol.
Absolutely, or even a beer.
Whichever.
Yeah.
Absolutely, mate.
Where's going to be the best place to send people if they want to find out more about you or if they want to take you up on your offer of a 30-minute call?
You know what? Look me up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Stephen Jones, The Business Disruptor, Stop Surviving, Start Thriving is the podcast. Stop Surviving, Start Thriving in Your Business is the business group that's designed to help people. I'm never going to proclaim to be the world's expert at anything, but I've been teaching businesses how to do the business side of their business since the late 90s. If you can bring me something that stumps me, I will be absolutely amazed. And if you just want a half hour chat to get your shit together and work out where you're at, it's not going to cost you anything, guys, but it might help you.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much for that. Make sure to go take a look at all of Stephen's stuff. He's got some really good content out there. Join his Facebook group. It's a really good Facebook group. I've been in it now for probably a year or so.
It certainly is.
Yeah. So, yeah, it definitely just seems like take a look.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks so much. Too.